brothers, the lost fathers, and the forsaken children, and let them come quickly, for a voice of crying is heard out of Zion, for we are greatly confused, for death has come into our ghettos, to cut off the young men and women from the streets of Philadelphia, New York, L.A., Georgia, Ohio, Florida, Mississippi, and throughout America, South America, the Caribbean islands, Africa, Asia, and all over the world. So return unto me, thus saith Yah, and I will return unto you, O my people.
Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all thy getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage. And listen to the live stream from that location. You can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. That's blacktalkradionetwork.com. And listen to the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. And listen to the live stream also at that location. Or you can download TuneIn. To any of your handheld devices, TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening with a live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll see interesting articles that's posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media home base is there. And that should be one of your favorites already. If not, make that one of your favorites. Put it in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content, podcast of the programs that you can download, listen at later times, or even share with your friends. Some changes are coming to timeforanawakening.com within the next couple of weeks. I think it's user-friendly now, but it'll be a different setup. Podcasts of the other programs that have been added to Time for Awakening will be there, so you can download more content, listen to other programs, and share them also with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, open forum is scheduled, but first we're going to have a visit from the health minister of the Universal African People's Organization. Minister Nathaniel Jordan will be with us this evening to talk about a health problem that really plagues our community, type 2 diabetes. We're going to get into some things in reference to some of the knowledge that Minister Jordan wants to share with our listening audience. And plus, we'll have some other health questions that we'll throw in there, and you can get involved in the conversation, too, while he's here by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Then afterwards, we'll transition into some open talk with the listeners. But first, we'll be right back to open the program after a brief word from our sponsors.
Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Overworked? suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back. Time for an awakening, and before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir. How you doing, Brother Ellis?
I'm doing great, Brother Richard. Doing great, man. Looking forward to the conversation with the health minister.
Yes, health is always important for us.
Yeah, I wanted him to do more of a regular spot, but maybe next year in July, in January moving forward, we can incorporate him into the regular schedule. But until then, we'll just have some segments where he comes on and talks about the different health issues that plague our community tonight. Before we go into open conversation, we'll be talking with the health minister about type 2 diabetes, and I want to welcome in the health minister of the Universal African People's Organization, Minister Nathaniel Jordan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, my brother. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Hear you loud and clear, and I'm glad to have you back with us.
How you doing there, brother?
Hey, I'm doing good, Brother Richard, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. It's always good to be on the show and to speak life to us about this extremely important and sometimes overlooked issue.
You know, Minister Jordan, the type 2 diabetes plagues almost all of the black families I know. Somebody in the family, two or three people sometime, have type 2 diabetes. Talk about the importance of what we're dealing with when we talk about this disease, the causes of the disease. And, you know, it's something I read in the information that you sent me, and I'll kind of do a lead-in with this. You have... By 2050, health authorities are predicting that one-third of all Americans will be diabetic, and how the medical industry has a vested interest in assuring this outcome is fulfilled. Talk about that leading into information on diabetes.
Right, and that's a third being diagnosed by a medical doctor, you know, so... when you talk about Americans that are walking around, especially our people, black people walking around with diabetes or pre-diabetes or some type of insulin resistance from being too overweight, it's already 50%. So it's way over 20% of all black people are diagnosed by a doctor as being type 2 diabetic, and then another 30 to 40% are walking around with pre-diabetes, and many of them have diabetes. They just won't go to the doctor.
Now, when you go ahead. I didn't want to cut you. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So we're talking about the, you know, those statistics are already being, fulfilled. This is a true epidemic. But what was the question you were going to ask?
When you say pre-diabetes, what do you mean?
So diabetes, they don't consider you a diabetic unless your blood sugar is over 100. Unless your blood sugar is over 100, they don't consider that being type 2 diabetes. And I'm sorry, you're right, a 72 if it's over 108 milligrams per deciliter, then that's considered a type 2 diabetic. So, but anything that's right underneath 108, you know, then that's considered pre-diabetes. So pretty much anything when fasting, if it's over 108 but under 140, that's pre-diabetes. And then if it's 140 or over, then that's type 2 diabetes. So pre-diabetes is right outside of the blood sugar range for them to consider you a full-blown type 2 diabetic. So okay. More than half of all black Americans are pre-diabetic. And of course, the dangers in that is that having excess insulin puts you at a 30% higher risk for cancer of all sorts of cancer, especially cancer in the colon. And then it more than triples your risk for Alzheimer's and dementia. So that's what pre-diabetes. So the point is that we don't want to depend on the medical system of our oppressors to point at a number, to wait until our blood sugar is 150 and then say, ooh, you're a type 2 diabetic. That's what they mean when they say by 2050, 30% of all Americans would be diabetic. That means that the medical industry has gotten a hold of them and diagnosed them, and then they can put them on their dangerous diabetic medications. But that number has already been fulfilled, and we've already seen it in our children. Our children are so obese that they don't even call it adult onset type 2 diabetes. It's just called diabetes. And diabetes is the worst of all diseases. It's by far the worst disease because it leads to so many problems that are central to the black struggle. I mean, I'm just trying to think of where to start at, my brother. Let's talk about the fact that if you're a type 2 diabetic and you start with having insulin resistance as a child, you'll be lucky to make it in your 30s without being demented or having Alzheimer's, because being a diabetic is so strongly linked to dementia and Alzheimer's that is actually called type 3 diabetes. That's really what dementia and Alzheimer's should be called. But they play word games and separate those diseases. But next time you see a person with dementia, Alzheimer's, really, that's a symptom. That's the ultimate lead off or side effect from being a diabetic, from having a high level of insulin resistance. And insulin resistance means that because you're eating foods that excrete a huge amount of insulin to get the blood sugar down, that excess insulin makes you fat and it swells up your fat cells so that the cells can't open up and receive insulin. So that insulin stays elevated throughout your body, which causes cancer, causes obesity, and then that sugar stays high in your blood, which causes the hardening of the arteries, which leads to blindness and amputations, and then directly destroys the function of the brain. And, of course, dementia and Alzheimer's are the that's the end result of having severe brain damage. But the precursors to that is what we see destroying our communities, and that's aggression. That's the aggressive behavior. That's the black-on-black crime. That's the anger. That's the mental inflexibility. See, those are all signs of insulin resistance, of pre-diabetes, of a high level of sugar in the bloodstream. Directly affects the brain. Diabetes and mental illness is very closely linked together, almost the same type of disease. They've done studies where they'll take diabetics and they'll track their ability to forgive each other and how they treat each other. You can track the level of crime in our communities and compare it to the rate of diabetes. That's how strong of a correlation, you know. And of course, the cause of it is the junk foods that are saturating our communities that I can't get our people to gather up and start protesting again. We just, you know, want to, you know, protest and talk about what the police is doing. But then after we get done protesting, we want to go eat some Kentucky Fried Chicken and all this other garbage. And the white man laughing at us because that's the real thing that's killing almost 500 of our people every day.
That's what I wanted to kind of break into, the causes. You know, the obesity, you talked about the elevated blood sugar levels. But let's go to some of the root causes that starts this diabetes ball to rolling, so to speak. Break into some of that, Minister Jordan.
Yeah, so the cause of type 2 diabetes is being too fat.
Okay.
That's what causes type 2 diabetes. And the reason why you become overweight is from eating foods that have no micronutrients. So if some of the audience remembers from last time, I made an emphasis on the G-bombs. That's your greens, beans, onions, mushroom, berries, and seeds. Those are foods that not only give you the protein, carbohydrates, and fats you need, but they come loaded with the natural medicines that God put in the foods that grow from earth. We don't eat those foods. We eat foods that give us a lot of calories, a lot of protein, a lot of carbohydrates, a lot of fat, but they don't give us any of the medicines that we need to stay at a lean and healthy body fat. Whenever you eat a macronutrient that does not have the natural fibers and phytonutrients and other nutrients found in whole natural plant foods, it skyrockets insulin. That's the hormone that the pancreas produces to lower blood sugar out of the blood. And the pancreas will excrete too much insulin. And the result of too much insulin from eating that fried chicken, all of it has sugar in it. And it doesn't matter. People think they eat a bucket of fried chicken, a buffalo, and, oh, well, I'm not eating sugar. Yes, you are. Every facet of saucing and baking and frying that chicken is sugar. And the body will process it like sugar. And then the meat itself also skyrockets insulin. And then that excess insulin, that surge of insulin, promotes the growth of body fat, which swells up the cells, and a fattened cell cannot receive insulin, which carries the blood, the sugar out of the blood. So sugar stays high. And then your pancreas will keep on pumping out more and more and more and more insulin, and then eventually it'll just give up and poop out. It's called pancreatic poop out. And your sugar just, it'll just keep staying high. Insulin stays high, and you get fatter and sicker, and then all the other bad stuff start happening. You got to get an amputation. You know, you go blind because the small vessels leading to your eyes become clogged. You suffer from cancer, especially colon cancer, because, the, you know, all of that excess sugar calcifies and and wreaks havoc upon your cells in the digestive tract, because cancer cells primarily feed off of sugar. So that's the cause. The cause is being too fat, and we get too fat when we eat foods that have no micronutrients. But here's the hard part. It's easier said than done, because the foods that don't have micronutrients have been intentionally designed by our oppressors to be more addicting than crack cocaine. Eating a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken gives you more pleasure than if you go around the corner and shoot up heroin into the veins. That's been scientifically proven, and that's why even though 500 black people die every single day from a food-related disease, it's hardly any large-scale outcry about it. And then people are so, they be, you know, I draw so much attention to my message because, as you can hear, how passionate I get about it, because I see the wholesale slaughtering of our people, and then it's now affecting our children, because over 90% of all African-American children already have heart disease by the time they're 10. And diabetes directly causes heart disease, because that sugar and that insulin hardens the blood flow in the arteries that also puts you at a high level for heart. So most diabetics die of heart attacks in their 50s like my uncle did. Okay. And then if you do make it past the heart attack, you're going to become demented or have Alzheimer's. So it's a true weapon of mass destruction. That diabetes is a weapon. You're talking about black-on-black crime, getting your limbs chopped off, dementia, Alzheimer's, depression, aggression, suicidal behavior, and violence. And it's all linked to eating foods that gives our bodies too much insulin.
Before I pass things over to Brother Richard, I just want to mention, because I was reading some reports from WebMD medical site, and it directly correlates with what you're saying, because it mentioned how diabetes and prediabetes is driving up breast cancer in black women, and it also states about the aggressive type of endometrial cancers in black women directly related to diabetes. Before we get into the preventions and things like that, where we can start preventing these things, talk about the relationship between the ovarian cancers and things of that nature and breast cancers and diabetes.
Sure. So again, the crux of diabetes is insulin resistance. It's too much insulin, too much sugar. And so insulin is a hormonal, it's a hormone, and it affects our hormones. So insulin, it drives body fat, and excess body fat excretes too much estrogen, which is directly linked to breast cancer and ovarian cancer, because those are hormonal cancers. So that's the direct link to diabetes. It's the insulin, is the excess insulin. Then the secondary thing is the sugar, because sugar fuels cancer cells. So the insulin makes you fat. And that's when all the problems start, because that excess body fat on, for my sisters listening, that's more than just a cosmetic problem. You know, it's more than just an issue of wanting to look good in the bikini. No, that excess body fat is the cause of you being at a high risk for breast cancer and ovarian cancer, because that excess body fat excretes too much estrogen. Staying with my brothers listening, that's where your prostate cancer scares and is coming in, because estrogen is being excreted from that body fat. That's where your lethargy and other, you know, and even sexual dysfunction in men comes from too much body fat. So that's the link between diabetes and cancers, that diabetes, the insulin resistance promotes body fat, and body fat promotes the excretion of cancer-causing hormones such as estrogen. And then also being a type 2 diabetic means that you have metabolic syndrome, meaning that your body's blood sugar level is too high, and sugar fuels cancer. So those two together, I mean, that's why the most dangerous thing that someone can put in their mouths is something like a Big Mac or a Triple Whopper or a fried chicken. You know, that fried chicken, it's almost an act of Russian roulette where you just pretty much putting a gun to your head, because the batter is nothing but sugar. So you're skyrocketing insulin and sugar at the same time. So you're driving up a surge of insulin to promote body fat, to promote too much estrogen, which then promotes the cancer. So we're talking about, you know, dangerous foods, very potent cancer-causing foods, you know, the foods that are most readily available in our communities, very scientifically, a masterful job of creating the cancer epidemic in our communities with these Frankenfoods.
Brother Richard.
You know, Brother Minister, I'm kind of looking at, as I hear you, and personally concerned. I have a younger nephew that has diabetes, and a older niece that has diabetes, and I've heard of other people. So it's, you know, as you said, it's personal to a lot of us as far as having people around us. So I want to also explore from a self policy, not just necessarily a personal health, but a self policy. And what I hear you saying is that sugar is for African people, from a political perspective, a dangerous commodity that we should regulate. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
I would prefer to say micronutrient deficient foods, because any food that does not contain vitamins, minerals, and plant chemicals and fiber is processed as sugar and processed too fast. So I would include white flour, you know, all of these different breads, the breadings, you know, all of that is considered. So I don't want people to just think that I'm just talking about, oh, well, as long as I'm not dumping sugar, you know, on my food, I'm good. No, you know, if it doesn't have any micronutrients, you can consider it sugar.
And the other thing that struck me, and as you were speaking with Brother Elliot, was the point when you were dealing with the numbers. So we should be targeting that our is that sugar number should be below 108.
Yes. But they got different. It should be between 72 to 108 when fasting. And that's the American, so it should be before meals, it should be 70, to 89, milligrams per, deciliter. So that is, so yeah, 70 to 99, and then it, so anything over that, then if you want to go by fasting. So if you wake up and fast after fast before you eat and take your blood sugar, then it should be between 70 and 99. I was finished.
And does that mean that, as a habit, because this society is so insidious with making everything, how you say, micronutrient deficient,
right?
That we should, as a habit, not only continue to look towards eating correctly, but also monitoring, just as we monitor our cars or our you know, the heating system in our houses. We should be monitoring our sugar level, just as a matter of health prevention.
Well, yes and no. If you insist on, you know, eating Frankenfoods, you know, and don't have the determination to get rid of your food addiction, then sure, you can monitor it. But, you know, you're eating a plant-rich diet and you're eating, you know, the diet style that we should be eating, your blood sugar be normal. You wouldn't need to stress and worry about those things. But, you know, sure, if you You know, if you are diabetic and you're trying to monitor it, you know, meaning, you know, you're making changes and monitor it, then yes, you know, or if, you know, if for somebody that would insist on, well, I don't care what, you know, the minister say, I'm going to have my cake and ice cream. I mean, okay, well, that might be beneficial if you want to play it like that to where you, you know, want to, you know, still keep, you know, poison in the diet. But, I mean, the best of what I'm advocating is that we get rid of those foods completely and learn to make delicious gourmet recipes, including desserts from plant-rich foods that will never skyrocket our blood sugar. You can have, I had apple pie this week, but it was 100. It's 100% from plants with no sugar. Delicious apple pie that won't raise your blood sugar. So we have the recipes. We have delicious recipes, and that's why I have books and stuff that I offer, so that our people can learn to, you know, to enjoy eating, you know, making and eating healthy foods. You know, even a Thanksgiving feast. We just put together. You know, my wife, you know, prefers to have, you know, I mean, I don't really, you know, celebrate Thanksgiving, but she prefers to still, you know, have a, quote, you know, feast, you know, during this time. And we just came up with about a whole feast, including desserts, you know, and it won't raise my, I won't have to check my blood sugar after I eat because it's all plant rich. It's all plant rich, whole natural foods, sweetened, you know, and the sweetness we use comes from the source of sugar that we should be consuming, and that's fresh fruits. We just have to learn to change our taste buds. We have to, you know, it's no loss of pleasure. It's not a loss of pleasure to stop destroying ourselves and destroying our race with and letting our race be exterminated, you know, with these frankenfoods by changing over. And that's one of the messages I'm trying to get after also. But you eat right, And you don't need no, you know, to keep monitoring and taking tests all the time.
Mr. Jordan, I just want to be clear and clear for the listening audience. And in fact, the listening audience, if they've got questions, they can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. I just want to be clear. The processed sugar is what causes us problems, but the natural sugars that's in fruits. I don't know too much about vegetables, but the processed sugar that's in fruits is good for us.
Right, and I'm sorry, and you did not you did you say processed sugar in fruits?
I mean, not processed. The natural sugars. That's
right,
in fruits.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to be clear on it. Yes. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The natural, the sugar naturally occurring in fresh fruit. Yes. That's the source of sugar that God intended for our people to eat.
Okay.
It comes packaged with the fiber and the micronutrients and will not skyrocket your blood sugar. Now, if you trying to reverse type 2 diabetes, stick to berries, because berries are very low in sugar. So there are some higher sugar fruits that if you have type 2 diabetes and you're trying to reverse it. So you want to stick to berries, strawberries, cherries, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries. But that's what you want to stick to. Once you're free of diabetes, sugar is that's the source of fresh fruit. Is the source of sugar meant for the human species.
Okay. Now, the changing of the diet, just say somebody had, they were borderline diabetic or diabetic, and they wanted to change their diet. Before they institute a diet change, would you recommend some type of body cleanse? And if you do, what would you recommend?
No. The body, you know, if you switch over to a whole food plant-based diet, that is the cleanse you need. So if you're on insulin, it's so powerful, you'd have to go to your doctor and say, doctor, I'm about to go over to a plant-rich diet to reverse this type 2 diabetes. Now make sure, and I do recommend that our people, that black people all have a black naturopathic doctor, because you might get screamed at and cussed out by your conventional medical doctor if you tell them that you're attempting to get off medications. But a naturopathic doctor can will be excited to help you get off medication. So, excuse me, the whole food plant-rich diet is the cleanse you need. It is the cleanse. There's no other, you know, magical formula that you need. It's just eating the foods that we're supposed to eat and that don't skyrocket sugar, and almost in a week, you'll see the magical effects. I had a brother from like Colorado, and he heard me when I was on the Carl Nelson radio show, and he called me and told me in 4 days his blood sugar was too low. And he still hadn't even lost a lot of weight, but just listening to what I said, just taking some of the advice, eating a large salad every day, smoothies, freshly squeezed vegetable juice. And he was asking me, what should he do? Because he was still on insulin. His sugar was real low. And I told him, you need to get off of it and go to the doctor. So the man pretty much reversed type 2 diabetes in 4 days. And yet the wicked American Diabetic Association says that's impossible.
Now,
you know, so that's the detox you need. There's nothing special that you take beforehand. You just dive right into eating your G-bomb diet.
Okay. So because I want to really kind of take this slow. Once
right.
we start instituting a healthier diet,
right.
what you're saying, you'll immediately see differences in your blood sugar. Now,
yes.
when will the folks start seeing the difference in their weight dropping?
The weight will be immediate, too, because you'll lose a lot of water weight. So usually my obese clients lose 10 or more pounds in the first week.
Okay.
I had a sister that did her first week with me, and she lost 10 pounds. That's normal. She was very excited. And I try to stay real excited every time I see it, but I've seen it so much. You know, so when people are text me and say, yeah, I lost 10 pounds this week, you know, and I've seen it happen so much, you know, so, you know, so, yeah, the weight loss, when you're obese, you know, you can lose as much as, you know, 20 to 30 pounds in a month. It's a very powerful diet because body fat, the plant food shuts off insulin secretion down to the bare minimum. And again, it's the excess insulin that promotes body fat. So when you're not eating an insulin promoting diet, you know the body will quickly tear down that body fat.
Okay. Now I think you went over some of these things before, but it's always good for folks that didn't hear you
right.
on before to talk about some of the things that they could institute right away. If you were giving them the first week in their diet, what would you recommend that they eat for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner?
Sure. So if you got type 2 diabetes, to reverse type 2 diabetes in 30 days, which can be done, for breakfast, you want to have a smoothie. You want to have a delicious smoothie, or you can do steel-cut oats, you know, loaded with berries. But if you want to go all the way to it, because like I said, we don't want anything to surge any insulin, so I would do a smoothie with leafy greens, you know, you can have some freshly squeezed berry juice, like some pomegranate juice, some frozen berries, ground chia, hemp, or flax seeds. You can throw in a banana and you can blend that up. And I'm reading directly from the article on my website, The Eating Plan to Reverse Type 2 Diabetes. And I have recipes for this smoothie. For lunch, you would stuff yourself with a raw salad. You know, take all your favorite vegetables and chop them up. You want to use, you know, the base of your salad should be 4 to 6 cups of chopped, finely chopped leafy green vegetables. Your dressing should be homemade. And I have a delicious citrus salad with orange peanut dressing on this article that I have. Dinner, you'd have a large bowl of bean, vegetable, mushroom soup. And then on the side of that, you want to have a pound of steamed green vegetables. Then you want to exercise every day. You do that for a week. I mean, most people will be able to completely reverse type 2 diabetes right there. But for those whose type 2 diabetes are more advanced, it'll probably take you up to a month if you ate exactly like what I've just told you.
Okay. Richard, go ahead. I didn't want to cut across
you. No. Brother Minister, the thing that, you know, I mentioned before, I juice, and I take, you know, so I think the last time you were on, you had mentioned walnuts, and I think it was what I call pumpkin seeds. And I think when I go in the store, they call them something else. But and I started putting that in the when I blend the blend the fruit up berry. And you mentioned berries, so I started getting more berries. Right? You had me working, right? And I put those in with the bananas and. It's an enjoyable drink. But what I hear you saying now is, I usually take that with me to work and drink it through the day. Compared to that's the first thing that I should start off with, and that's what I'm hearing you say, right? That you should start
off
with your, okay.
Yeah. I would, and I would highly recommend you. You know, add a smoothie too, brother. I, you know, like to see the smoothie and then, you know, the small glass of freshly squeezed vegetable juice, you know, with the smoothie, because that definitely benefits. Somebody was asking me today, well, why can't I just do smoothies all the time? Well, we have teeth for a reason. So we need to still, you know, eat coarsely food or food. And so a smoothie is the second form away from a salad and then a square freshly squeezed vegetable juice. So the freshly squeezed vegetable juice is good, but you know, you don't want to do more than about 12 ounces of freshly squeezed vegetable juice per day. Excellent supplement, but yeah, that would be perfect if you add a light little smoothie to it with your freshly squeezed juice. That's perfect.
And I noticed at work, you know, so I have I keep a container of grapes because I notice at work what people do is they go to the vending machine. What I see, and it makes me cringe, is a lot of Pepsi drinkers because of the stress, right? I believe that's what it is. A lot of Pepsi drinkers, and then a lot of people that use the vending machine. But I notice that when I have all these grapes sitting there, it's and I feel stressed in that moment, I can take the handful and pop them. And I don't know if that's the appropriate way to say it. To just instead of you know, getting the pretzel, getting, you know, going to the vending machine or whatever, is that would you recommend that as a means of that snack food in dealing with and trying to prevent diabetes or at least getting it under control?
No. And here's the reason why. Snacking in between meals is it shuts off the ability of the body to heal itself. You know, so my goal is that we want to get to a level, you know, of nutritional excellence to where we're not snacking at all in between meals, because the medicines that we consume from the plant foods cannot work if we're constantly eating and digesting, breaking down food. Now, you know, for somebody that is having a terrible time overcoming the addictive nature of the Frankenfoods. I mean, it's just very hard because you doped up for so long. I would rather that's better than nothing, you know, to pop in a piece of fresh fruit than, of course, going to the death machine or the vending machine. Mm-hmm. So that's better than that. But we don't want to snack in between meals. We want to let our body heal. We want to live in a state of fasting, also called the catabolic phase. The body can only heal. Detoxification has been completely overhyped in our society. The pharmaceutical industry has turned the concept of detox in our minds into something that we take. That's not true. Detox actually only can happen when there's nothing in the system and the body, nothing's being broken down in your body, and then your immune system now has the ability to heighten its senses to go about repairing, you know. So the pancreas can't repair, body fat cannot be broken down unless you're not eating. So no, we don't want to snack. We want to eat our food and then let the medicines work. So for most people, you know, we shouldn't be eating no more than 1 to 3 times a day.
Mm. Okay.
If I one more question, everyone. So how does water play in assisting with diabetes and assisting in optimal health?
Well, it's very important, but when you switch over to a whole foods, plant-based diet, the water will come naturally with the produce. You know, so you just drink. For somebody like me, I drink more water when I'm working out. If I'm not working out, I get a lot of it, plenty. I don't have to drink too much excess water outside of what I get from produce. So produce is very high in water. That's the part of the reason why a salad will fill you up so fast, is because it's very water dense. So you can actually drink too much water. If you eat like me and you try to still drink 8 cups of water per day, you're going to overhydrate yourself, and you'll be peeing every 5 minutes, which will get annoying very quickly. You know, so that's just that they on the sad, you have to drink a lot of water because of all the salt, and salt will dehydrate you. So you have to drink a lot of water. So a lot of the dietary recommendations are built around our food addiction. They tell you to eat 5 meals a day because to them, when your stomach growls and you have a headache, that means you're hungry, when that's not what hunger is. That's withdrawal pains. When you're healed, you don't ever feel hunger in the mouth. I mean, in the stomach and in the head, you feel it in the mouth and in the throat, and it's not uncomfortable. They tell you to, you know, to eat 5 meals a day to keep your metabolism high, but keeping your metabolism high will age you faster and cause cancer faster. You don't want to, you know, eat to artificially, you know, boost your metabolism. You want to naturally get a higher metabolism by strength training and building muscle, because muscle takes a lot of calories to burn. And then with water, you know, you want to get most of your water from food, and that's from your plant foods, and then just drink according to thirst. And most of that will be, you know, in the summertime and when you're working out. But besides that, you know, you don't need, just like the red wine. It's not good for your heart unless you're eating triple whoppers with cheese. Then the red wine might help you to not die right there of a heart attack, like 300 of our people do every single day, drop dead of a heart attack. But if you're eating a whole food plant-based diet and you're at no risk for heart disease, I mean, that red wine ain't going to do you no good, because you don't need it. Okay. You know, this is all, you know what I'm saying? You know, so okay. All of it, you know, the PSA screenings, you know, you eating right, you don't need it. But if you insist on poisoning yourself, then, you know, go ahead and let the doctor stick his finger up your behind. If you're going to eat a diet style that's promoting, you know, that's going to promote cancer, get the test. But if you're not going to, you know, if you're eating the way we're supposed to eat, you know, then we don't need those, you know, all of these, you know, devices that they've invented to try to, you know, detect how much we're killing ourselves with food.
3 things before we wind this segment down, Mr. Jordan. When you're making smoothies, using coconut or almond milk, what your feelings on that?
It's okay. You know, I would, you know, and I think I mentioned this before. I know we used to make our own almond milk. So it's best to get it organic, you know, get your plant milks organic to make sure they're not, you know, adding a bunch of chemicals, and to get it unsweetened. Okay. You know, they'll add sugar to it, you know, so, but it's best to make your own. That's always the best. The best is just to get some 8 cups of water, some almonds, and a little bit of vanilla, and that's your that's almond milk right there.
And just put it in the blender?
Right, yeah. Yes, okay. Sir. Yeah. You pour 8 cups of water and about a cup of almonds and add a little splash of vanilla, and you blend that together until it's smooth, and bam, you got you about a gallon worth of fresh almond milk. And we used to do it, and I need to get back to it, because
now how about the coconut, the same thing?
Now coconut, I've never made coconut milk. Okay. I've never made coconut milk. But if someone do get coconut milk, then I'll just say, again, make sure it's organic. And look at that ingredient label. Make sure they're not adding that, you know, the sugar and all the sodium and all the other chemicals that, you know, they always finding a way to put in our food to kill us.
Now, one other question. You mentioned the 8 cups of water and a cup of almonds and a little vanilla. If somebody added, just say, some fruit to that, strawberries or whatever, could that make like and freeze it, could that make like an ice cream for them?
Oh, absolutely. This week we had banana walnut ice cream. We did freeze about 8 bananas, freeze 8 bananas overnight, then add about a cup of almond milk, unsweetened almond milk, and then throw in about a cup of walnuts. Blend that up real good until it's nice and smooth. Put that in the freezer. Warm up your Nutritarian apple pie and scoop some on top of that, brother, and you feel like you're in heaven.
Okay.
And it won't kill you.
Okay.
Won't kill you. Will lower diabetes. No cancer called banana walnut ice cream. Then you can do put some dark cherries. If you do dark cherries with the almonds and the dates, and that's chocolate cherry ice cream. You know, very good, very delicious. Even sad eaters that I've had try that, you know, they love those ice creams.
Okay. Number two, the use of, because once in a while in the mornings I'll, you know, if I drink some water, I'll put some apple cider vinegar in the water. The use of apple cider vinegar or even black seed bitters, talk about the benefits to that and what you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, the benefits is that the benefits of apple cider vinegar is because it comes from an apple.
Okay.
You know, so, I mean, if apple cider vinegar is healthy, then you can rest assured that the whole apple is a billion times more healthier. So, you know, so I have no doubt that somebody who's trying to moderate, you know, the poison in their diet because they still just not ready to let go of the dope foods, that if you add a little bit of something healthy, you'll see effects. You know, they've already shown that in scientific studies. Women eating junk food, and if they add just flax seeds to their diet, their breast cancer tumor shrunk by 60% just from adding a little bit of flaxseed.
Okay.
So what happened if they add everything else? So the same with the black seed oil or all oils, you know, you want to get it from the whole source. But of course, when you're eating a nutrient poor diet and you add a little bit of something from the plant kingdom, it just further validates how powerful those foods are.
Okay. One thing before I let you go, Mr. Jordan, I just seen a release a couple of days ago that Jesse Jackson has been diagnosed with Parkinson's. And he mentioned that he's going to change his, I'm more than sure he said, diet and lifestyle. Talk about the changes that somebody can make when they're diagnosed already with like a neural, either, I don't know whether that would be considered a neurological or neuromuscular disease. How can a diet change help someone that's already been diagnosed with something of that nature? And would that be considered a neuromuscular or
neurodegenerative?
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and it's a neurodegenerative disease. Now, it can prevent it, you know, from happening. You know, because it's the high animal diet and the micronutrient deficiencies that destroys, you know, the cells of the central nervous system and of the brain. Now, as far as I know, it can slow the progression once you've been diagnosed. But once you've destroyed your brain to the point of actually being diagnosed, then that's a hard road.
Okay.
That's a hard road to travel. I don't know. I have to do some more, you know, research on the success stories. But for right now, as far as I know, once you get diagnosed with it, you can slow its progression. But you know, I don't know if you can 100%. Reverse it at that point. You know, we have to stop destroying our bodies for 60, 70, 80 years. And then once we've destroyed half of our brain, then we want to flip over and think, you know, and try to regrow all of those damaged brain cells. That's extremely difficult to try to accomplish. But it's 100% preventable. If we start now, we can never have to worry about it or get it in our children. And so he can slow the progression. Like if I was able to consult him and give him, the diet style that he, coached, Reverend Jackson, I could definitely help him tremendously. And then if it's just, onset, if it's not too advanced, I could probably help him regress it. But I couldn't make him a promise like I can make my brothers and sisters who are type 2 diabetic. I can promise you I could help you reverse that easily. But with him, I couldn't promise him, but I guarantee I could give him a better chance than anybody else could with the information. I don't know what type of diet he's going to try to go on. There's so much misinformation out there.
Yeah, he mentioned in a published report that he had been consulting with folks that said that he could change his diet and lifestyle that would slow the progression, just like you said, that would slow the progression of the disease. But he didn't, I guess that, like you said, once they're destroyed, they're not necessarily coming back. But you can, I guess kind of slow the progression. I just thought that, I'd get some input from you in relation
that nutritarian diet, the diet style I advocate, it's extremely potent at, at reversing these diseases. There's some miracles that have happened. I couldn't guarantee them. That's what I'm saying. Like I couldn't, I couldn't guarantee, okay, Reverend Jackson, you listen to me, 6 months, Parkinson's is gone. I could not guarantee it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it happened. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
A lot of balls of iron get built up in the brain, and that's also causing Parkinson from too much meat, too much heme iron in the meat, and it builds metallic balls in the brain that blocks blood flow from getting to all the cells in the brain, and that causes the destruction of the brain, leading to neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's.
Yeah, well, all of these things are helpful. If we implement these things, I'm thinking back when I was a boy, and I'm quite sure you and Brother Richard can think back when you were a boy, that most of our friends were relatively thin. When you seen somebody that was chubby, and I'm not talking about obese, a chubby kid, he was the brunt of jokes. Oh, look at that fat boy, or, that fat person. But now if you look at a lot of our children, all of them are overweight. And it, like you said, it's the fast foods. It's these Asian stores that's on the corners in our community with salt, pepper, and ketchup on everything that the people are buying in there, the fried wings and all that other stuff. We got to do better for ourselves and for our children to start implementing some of these things to change the diet, because a lot of our young people now, before they get to be 40 years old, they're going to have tremendous health issues. And I'm just saying that, I'm just throwing that in accordance with what you're saying. But you've been saying this the times that you've been on.
It's sad. We facing an apocalyptic time. I'll be speaking at a symposium in Dr. Sabe's honor, and I've encouraged people to follow me on my Facebook page. And if you can make it over here to hear my lectures, but if you can't make it over here, then then I can come out, to you and speak. I'll be on the East Coast in December, Ace helping the elder out with his health, so I can talk to you more about that off the air book. But I do health and wellness lectures. We in an apocalyptic time. These children today, they 20 and 30 and 15 years old, and they obese. Their mental function is destroyed. No economics, can be gained from a destroyed brain. It's full-scale genocide at work. Like I said, at the end of the day, no matter what we talk about, I was just amazed. I was looking at the leading causes of death in Haiti, and as poor as that nation is, the third leading cause of death in Haiti is stroke. Now, what in the world are them people eating to where they, as poor as they are, how is that the third leading cause of death? And even Mexico, you would think is in Mexico, you would think it has something to do with gang violence. They number one cause of death is diabetes. Number one cause of death by far and away in Mexico, the number one reason why Mexicans die is because of diabetes. That just astounds me. It's like, even when I look at Afghanistan, they die mostly from heart disease, you know? So it's nowhere, everywhere that I look in the world, it just amazes me how it's the food, you know, that's killing people. And then even the people that are dying of starvation is because of our food addiction, because the reason why they dying of starvation is because instead of their wicked government using the land to give them food, they're using the land to grow food to feed our chickens and our cows.
Well,
you know, so yeah.
I'm glad that you were able to share with us. I'll be looking forward to your next visit and some of the things that you'll be discussing in your next visit. I'll make sure that that we kind of promote it, put it out there, so people can have their pens and pencil ready to mark some of these things down. And before you leave us, Minister Jordan, give out any contacts, how people can get some of the books, how they can get some of those healthy recipes and things of that nature.
Yes, sir. TheMinisterOfWellness.com. TheMinisterOfWellness.com. My title is The Minister of Wellness. You Google that. And you'll see my website, all my ebooks, my hard copies have gone fast. I think I only have about two or one of my diabetes and heart disease hard copies. So you'd have to immediately call me now at 314-443-8441. I only have about two copies of my reverse heart disease and diabetes hard copies. So you'd have to call me now at 314-443-8441 so I could get your payment and I can mail it off to you tomorrow. I have over 100 YouTube videos now on reversing cancer, on reversing heart disease and diabetes. So you can find me at The Minister of Wellness. You can subscribe to my channel. You can find me on Facebook at The Minister of Wellness. And I have lectures coming up, and if you need a health speaker for your event, you can book me through my website, or you can call me, and I'll come out and speak life to our people.
Mr. Jordan, what about any of the healthy recipes? I know that you said that some of them are in some of the books, but go ahead.
Right, and yes, sir. They're in all the books, and also I do have a 400-page, 150-recipe book called Eat for Health by Dr. Joel Fuhrman. And you can call that and get that from me. That's not on my website. You'd have to call me at 314-443-8441. Now, on my website, if you type in diabetes in search, you'll come up with an article I wrote on reverse type 2 diabetes in 30 days. And the recipes that I mentioned earlier when I went over what you should eat to reverse your diabetes, I do have the recipes listed in that article. But everything else, in my ebooks are only $10. My weight loss ebook is just $5. Of course, you can always donate more. Remember, family, any dime that you give towards me is 501. I'm a 501c3, so it's all tax deductible. And I am a one-on-one health coach. I do 3-hour consultations for just $100. And I'll give you a thorough personalized consultation for your condition. And again, even that is tax deductible. And all that can be found on my website, theministerofwellness.com.
And you're a powerlifter too. So if you need some tips on powerlifting, I can contact you, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, I got to get back in it. I've been real busy, and I have to wake up at 4:30 in the morning to train. So I've been kind of discouraged. I was an all-Marine boxer, and I've been actually wanting to get back into that again. But if I don't wake up at 4:00 in the morning, I don't have time to train because my day is so busy. But yes, I have won a deadlift competition. I've deadlift over 3 times my body weight. My 67-year-old mother, she can deadlift 225 pounds, and she's 67 years old, only 125 pounds.
Well, that's in your blood then, huh?
Yeah, I told her that. I teased her yesterday. I was like, Mom, I can see your muscle in your forearms now. I see where I got my strength from.
Hey, listen, I want to thank you for being with us, and I'll be in touch with you, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Always a pleasure, Brother Booker and Brother Richard.
All right, take care now.
Talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Okay.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll transition into open forum. And you can join us on the phone by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. That's Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Hey, did y'all see the stuff I posted on my wall?
Nah, it didn't even show up in my news feed.
Man, I'm done with social media. All the injustice and brutality going around, and it's like they're trying to suppress our voice. We're trying to get the message out there, and you can't even share empowerment and what's going on around the country either.
Nah, don't be dumb with social media, though. It's a tool, and there is a place where we have a voice. It's a Let's Buy Black 365 social network. You do anything you would on any other social network. Post pictures, videos, status updates, share resources and community news. But on Let's Buy Black 365, it's a platform for us and by us to tell our messages.
Whoa, that's like a digital underground railroad.
What's the name of that site again?
It's letsbuyblack365.com.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's all about networking, and you get points, right?
Yeah, the more you network, post, and share, the more points you get. Plus, you get points for posting pictures, sharing information, attending community events, and inviting others to network with you on the app.
Wow, that's all I need to know. I'm gonna go download that app right now.
Now, better yet, let me invite you so I can get some points. It's all about empowerment and solutions, y'all.
Yeah, that's what's up. I'm all in.
Let's do it. Let's share our stories.
Let's buy Black365.com.
Of the story of the young eagle. Perhaps you've heard it. There was once a farmer who had a barnyard of leghorn chickens, white leghorn chickens. And one day a friend of his said, you know, you could make some extra money if you would capture an eagle and show him around and charge admission to see him. And so the farmer said, that's a good idea. And he went out and he captured an eagle. But the eagle was too used to freedom. Too used to freedom and would not be tamed. And he would not hold still. And he fought back. And then his friend said, look, maybe we made a little mistake. Why not use the eggs, the two eggs that this female eagle has laid? And so the farmer said, that's good. And he put the two eggs under a setting hen. And in due time, one of the eggs hatched. And this young eagle came out. He didn't know who he was. So the farmer called him Tom. And he put Tom out with the chickens, and he ran around with the chickens, and he thought he was a chicken, never knowing that he was the king of the birds. And he ran around with the chicken. In due time, he became a little ashamed of his color. See, the other chickens were white, and his feathers were deep bronze. So he put some chicken oil on his feathers, kind of lighten them up a bit. And then he noticed that the feathers on his head stood up while the chicken's feathers laid down. And he was a little ashamed of that, so he tied a silk rag around his head. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Well, in due time, the other egg hatched. And when this other egg hatched, he broke bad when he came on set. Farmer called him Turk. Now, somehow, Turk felt that he didn't belong down there running away from the farm every time he stamped his foot. And one morning, very early, he wandered over to the edge of the barnyard, young Turk did, and he looked up into the sky, and there he saw a speck appear. And the speck got closer and closer. And close, and it got to be the largest bird he had ever seen. Of course, you and I know that it was a full-grown eagle. And the eagle came to rest on a branch right above the barnyard and looked down at young Turk and said, what are you doing down there with those chickens? And young Turk said, why, I am a chicken. He said, no, you're not a chicken. You're an eagle. He said, an eagle? What's an eagle? He said, an eagle is the king of the sky. So I want you to spread your wings and flap them and come up here beside me, and I want to rap to you a while. So young Turk said, I can't fly that high. You know chickens can't fly that high. And he said, why, you can fly that high. There's nothing that you can do. Because it's in your blood and in your bone. Spread your wings. He spread his wings. He flapped them and he flapped them and he rose higher and higher. Higher than he'd ever risen before. And he came in on the branch with the old eagle. The eagle says, now settle down here. He said, I want to tell you that your father was the king of the skies. No bird could fly higher nor farther than he could without rest. And your mother was a queen of the skies. She was looked up to and admired by all of the birds of the sky. That's who you are. He said, well, you know, I'm a little ashamed of the color of my feathers. He said, don't you know what that color represents? He said, well, that's royalty. Represents royalty. He said, oh, that makes me feel so good, Turk said. He said, but how about the way the feathers on my head stands up? And it's different from the other birds down there, the other chickens. So he said, why, don't you know that's your crown? I said that you were a king. He said, this sounds so good. He said, let's tell Uncle Tom. So he said, Uncle Tom, he called him Uncle Tom in deference to his older years, you know, he's a little older. Uncle Tom, and Uncle Tom is busy running around there with his silk rag on his head and so on. And he said, Uncle Tom, this fellow is telling us who we are. He's giving us our history. So Uncle Tom said, I don't want to hear anything about our history. I'm too busy eating this good food down here. And besides, you better come down here, you'll get us all in trouble. He said, I don't want to hear any history. So the old eagle said, just forget him. He's too brainwashed. Let us fly away to our destiny. And they took off.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. I want to thank our guest that was with us for the first portion of the program, Health Minister for the Universal African People's Organization, Minister Nathaniel Jordan, was with us. We'll probably be doing a segment with him maybe every month or so. He'll come in and key in on different things that affect our community and how we can reverse the effects of some of those issues, health issues. Brother Richard?
Yes, sir. You know, it's I'm glad he's that you know, working that out, because it'll definitely become helpful for people like me. I have to admit, I'm one of those in that category the minister is talking about that's kind of straddling the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's no excuse for it. And I definitely understand you know, the point that we have to show discipline in every level of our activity if we truly want to be free, right? I mean, the ultimate discipline and what goes into our body, if we can't show discipline in that arena, how can we show discipline in other social and political and economic arenas? But, you know, it's something I recognize I have to grow to. So I'm glad that he, you know, offering, you know, the insight and experience, you know, of how, you know, helped me move. As I said, I've been listening. I did one thing, then I think I picked up another thing. So, and I'm hoping the listening audience is in the same mode that I am in moving. You know, we have the will. We know the importance. We just have to continue to develop the discipline in order to do, or we'll be making our own self sick, which it is sick if you really want to make yourself sick, right? I mean, that don't make no sense, right?
Yeah, well, listen, I'm no different from you. I kind of go back and forth. I know some of the right things to do, and I'll do them for a period of time, but I'll slip back, you know, into bad habits. I was never, because I wasn't brought up on eating any pork. That wasn't cooked in my household when I was a young kid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I became grown, I never was into eating pork. So, but, you know, eating all that meat, period, is not good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of go back and forth. But, you know, hearing these men talk and constantly saying we shouldn't be doing these things, I know that I should be more disciplined. And what better way to start than start tomorrow? So, right. You know, a lot of these things, you know, I've been purchasing some books with different recipes, Brother Keedy and others that have been on the program, Minister Jordan. I want to get some of his books on different recipes. So once we have those things at hand, then it becomes less and less easy to slip back and you know, just eat fried foods and things of that nature. So that's one of the reasons why I bring him on.
Get into that, you know, and that's why I was raising the question with the minister, because it's the politics of this also that, because we have to also control our environment. I know, you know, you're involved with the black farmers. When he's talking about that high nutrient and all the vegetables, this builds an economy, because who do we have to go to? Who should we go to confirm that the types of you know what, vegetables and fruit that we'll be eating is in our best interest, and it also creates the economy. So it's not just about our personal discipline in relationship to our health, and especially for those who of us who claim that we're conscious, you know, and I'm very critical about that who claim that we're conscious, right? Mm-hmm. Because we have to demonstrate that in a lot of areas. So here are the black farmers. If we are ingesting more health-related food, we are and demanding that those farmers are supplying it, then we are also supporting an economy, because we're supporting those farmers who have to grow and also possibly another generation of farmers who will be looking out for our best interest and supplying us the kind of food chain that we need in order to be healthy. So it isn't just something from a personal, it is a communal activity that supports all of us. And with the minister made the point, about when he looked at Haiti and Afghanistan, yes, when they're creating in Mexico, when they're creating cash crops, you know, they're only creating a one crop, where those places used to create subsistence food, you know, farming. So they would be farming and eating what they farmed, as people in the South did at one time, especially after Reconstruction or after the Civil War. You know, you were eating what you grew. Now we eating with some factory, you know, some company that doesn't have us in our best interest. And that is a political question that we also have to address in order to control our environment, so that we won't have to be ultrally disciplined. Our environment as a communal effort will help us in our discipline in relationship to our behavior, in relationship to doing things that is good for us, starting with our body and our health. So diabetes won't be those numbers he was projecting, won't be the numbers that are so detrimental. And we won't have to be talking about somebody trying to kill us. We'll be preventing someone from killing us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we transition now into an open forum. So anything that's on your mind, this is a time to call. This is a time where we get to interact with the listening audience. It's always some things that we can throw out there as a topic of conversation. But if you have anything that you want to bring up, the phones lines are open at 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Richard, I forwarded you a letter from Brother Obi Egbona in reference to Zimbabwe to kind of follow up on the letter that we received from the Pan-African Congress in reference to the situation in Zimbabwe. And if you notice, the Western media, they don't have anything to print in reference to any negative stuff going. I don't know whether you've noticed the news the past couple of days, Richard.
Oh yeah, I've been following it.
Yeah, they would love to see something going on there where they can make it salacious and show, you know, some of our people doing things that or acting crazy or you know, but. I'm kind of glad the transition is happening smoothly. You know, we're close to some of the people that kind of touched the situation. I trust their opinions on what's going on. And all we can do now is just hope that things stay like they are. We know that the United States is going to try to take every advantage to look for an opening. And not only the United States, Europe, period, which is part of the United States. They're all brethren. They're going to look for an opening in that situation. But, you know, as long as things stay tight, stay close, the transition happens smoothly, this will be another beacon or another example of how we can handle things without other people's involvement. Our people are intelligent enough to handle any situation that comes about. We governed ourselves long before we even came in contact with Europeans. So it's not a surprise that our people can handle things sensibly and without violence. That's how Europeans always handle things, a violent response, handling things with violence. And that's why they were able to get a foothold throughout the world. Richard, and you know this better than me. When they started traveling and exiting Europe and going on ship travels after they, you know, thinking that the world was flat and they didn't want to travel, when they started going around, they went into other countries. Other countries they didn't have that warlike mentality. When they met strangers, they welcomed strangers. That was the thing that was spread about by our people when they went worldwide. The knowledge of handling things, to treat men like brethren and things of that nature. So when they ran into Europeans, they did the same thing. But they signed their death warrant when they did that with Europeans, because Europeans were a different type of man. He went into those islands and other countries, and when he seen the people were what he considered docile, he took advantage of that. And
we see the results of that hundreds of years later. So, you know, I'm kind of glad that our people know how to get back to things cultural and handling differences in a sensible manner. You know, one of the things, and the reason I brought that up, I just ran across this article, and I'm going to share it with the listening audience, because, you know, more and more, we have to understand that we have to disassociate ourselves, and it starts in the mind first. We have to disassociate ourselves from the goings-on that happens regularly in this government. Do we agree with these things? And if so, how does it benefit us as a people? I'm looking at this article, and it says, the U.S. has soldiers deployed in almost every country on Earth. It says the uproar about the dead soldier from Niger. Oh, hold on 1 second. Okay. It says the uproar about the dead Marine in Niger sparked a debate on the global U.S. military presence, which quickly showed that hundreds of troops in Niger are just the tip of the iceberg and pale against the global contingent. On the Pentagon website, there are quarterly updated Excel chart that meticulously lists all the troops' deployments. In the process, it brings to light astonishing facts. The U.S. has deployed a total of 240,000 troops in at least 172 countries around the world. As a reminder, there are only 194 countries on the globe, the 193 U.N. members plus Palestine. Also, in the 89% of these countries, the U.S. has military presence. If we want to remember one important number in 2017, it certainly is 172 countries. The list is led by Japan, with 39,980 troops spread across a hefty number of 84 U.S. military bases. As a part of that, more than 130,000 troops in the U.S. Pacific Fleet. Thus they spearhead the world war against China, the global sword of Damocles in the coming years and decade. The second country on the list is Germany, with 36,134 troops stationed in 38 U.S. military bases. And that is 72 years after the end of World War II and 27 years after the German reunification. In total, there are 19 countries on this globe with at least 1,000 U.S. troops stationed. In addition to Afghanistan, Iraq, harboring together 19,567 troops, the representative and partly fascist oil dictatorship of the Gulf region are mainly among these, with Italy, the UK, Spain, and even Austria, as well as a dozen smaller countries and contingents harboring tens of thousands of U.S. soldiers are stationed all over Europe with their headquarters in Stuttgart, Germany. So we see here that the U.S. has a presence in every country, almost, on this globe. And as we stated before, if the U.S. is not in every conflict that's going on in the world, the U.S. is supplying one side or the other, and sometimes both sides. So we see the global evil that this country perpetrates. This is not for righteousness. All these weapons of mass destruction in other people's business, in other people's affairs, all this old crap all on the news about Russian involvement in U.S. elections, when they have involvement in everybody's elections, in everybody's affairs, killing other countries' leaders if they don't go along with what the U.S. want to put down. And they got a nerve to be talking about some Russian interference in their elections. Who gives a damn? We should be giving a damn about what's going on and disassociating ourselves from this type of global evil. It's evil.
Yes, it is. It's imperialism. It is and global imperialism. But, you know, the U.S., one of its, besides Greece as its archetype, you know, supposedly a civilization, it also has Rome as its archetype, you know, in its making. And the imperial reach that this country, when they always talking about American interests, I noticed they never really define, well, what is it that what are you defining as the American interest? But at this stage, their concern is to have, and 45 is pushing, and a large part of the American, a large part of his base believe that America should have unchallenged authority over the planet and utilizing its weapons in order to demonstrate that unchallenged authority. That is, you know, is something that is just, I don't think it's, and I hope we as African people, and especially, you know, American Africans decide that that's not, we, based off of our history, that's not a good thing, a position that America should take. Because we know that these, as you characterize it, evil. We know what these guys do when they feel that they have unchallenged authority, the type of abuse. I mean, we were just talking about Hull. They don't have no concern, even amongst, about their populace in relationship to the health concern. They just increased that military budget, you know, while at the same time talking through the tax code to decrease the spending for popular support, the aged, the sick, the youth, you know. So America having that kind of reach in the name of its interests, I agree with you, Elliot. It is, you can characterize it no other kind of way but evil.
Yeah, well, we'll see what's going to happen in reference to this, because our people, and you see the decisions being made among some of our people. They try to keep the lid on it because the media that we have doesn't showcase the type of mindset change that are happening among our people. It's slow but sure, but it's definitely there. So I think Europeans recognize it clearly, because they want to ramp up this this new push towards black identity extremists. Mm. They hide the fact as blacks want to attack police, but that's not even, they know better than that. It's a little more, it's a lot deeper, not a little more, it's a lot deeper than that. They realize it's a mentality change that's happening among black people, and especially the youth. And they want to be able to get a lid and keep a lid on it. It happened before in the 60s when you had a bunch of youth in different areas of the country that decided that they wanted to move in another direction. Even though some of the elders and parents of those young people were kind of against what they were doing. And maybe not, and that might be the wrong term, saying against what they were doing, but they weren't in favor of them directly confronting white supremacy.
Mm.
Maybe that's a better term. And they did. We've seen what happened during that period of time. But we also seen the restructuring of how he wanted to deal with black people and how he wanted to mentally deal with the young people. Prior to that, he wasn't too concerned about young black folks. But he's seen that young black folks, especially on these college campuses, was a thorn in his side. When you have a cultural awareness of who you are, along with some type of education, it's dangerous. when you have other things. Yeah. Go ahead.
That's where we have to push it to where it becomes more systematized, it becomes more structured, and it becomes more strategic.
Exactly.
Because of the state being the American government, has always been able to, once they see this and they see the pushback, particularly amongst Africans, they first try to force it, then they absorb it, and the push at first is just, as you say, kind of the, I'm aware of what you're doing to me, mm-hmm. but not necessarily, I'm aware of what you're doing to me, and this is what I'm doing. And the Panthers came close to that with the breakfast program, and we can go each generation back of young people and how they started to put the system together. And then that internal friction, the state was able to absorb and then make people become comfortable. And then what used to be young people being agitated, now they felt that maybe they have a chance, an opportunity to actually change it.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing you can't change because it's not created like that.
It's not good.
That's
exactly.
Why they need to be strategic, and they need to have that intergenerational. But we also need, and this is what the Zimbabwe lesson, which we have to watch closely as
mm-hmm.
well.
Exactly.
How is it that the differences internally can be able to be different and at the end still be whole amongst themselves compared to going at war with each other? Because that, as you said earlier, that's what sets up the opening for the West to say, well, I'll support you
mm-hmm.
against them.
Yep.
And that gives it where now is that they don't have that opening.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's go to a couple calls here on hold. Let's go to 757.
Yes, how you doing? I'm enjoying your show tonight, Bro Allen, and you too, Richard.
How are you,
sir?
I just wanted to say about 3 weeks ago, I happened to be on a Saturday morning broadcast out of the West Coast, and it was live, and I sent some information to the gentleman. He's got a syndicated program, and he was talking about what you just went over, 172 countries.
Okay.
You went over that data.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he happened to be talking about Niger when the soldier was killed. So I had been reading up on that, and I told him, ex-military myself, I told him, I said, do you realize there's only one country on the continent of Africa that doesn't have U.S. troops? And he tells me, that's a stretch. That's going too far. Here on my program, we talk facts. So I didn't argue with him online. I just went on Google and pulled up Ron Paul, the former senator, congressman. I pulled up his testimony on C-SPAN saying there is but one country. 53 out of 54 African countries have U.S. troops in them, whether it's 10 of them as supervisors or, as you were saying, 100 to 1,000 in most places. And you already know the one country that doesn't have U.S. troops. You've just been talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's a change. So I just wanted to say it's shocking to me. There's so many people don't believe what you've been talking about, which is a factual thing. That is the one country that has shown the West that we don't need you meddling. And the other thing is, along with Cuba, you already know that country is going through sanctions. They don't talk about it. But the World Bank, the IMF, all of them have persecuted that country. They made anything and everything that they bring into Zimbabwe is an additional cost.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I would just like to tell you, I love the expertise, and I was especially pleased with the gentleman you had last week, too. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the program, man.
Yeah, And it's good that you can. Was this a Black Talk? I assume it was, but I'm just curious.
No, actually, it was. I was shocked. It was Earl Hutchinson's programs every Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, like I said, I'm 64, man.
You talking about Earl Afari Hutchinson?
Huh?
You talking about Earl Afari Hutchinson?
Yes.
So it was a Black Talk program, and he said that.
I didn't know it was a Black Talk program. I do this Saturday morning. He does a live stream, so I've just been following that.
And he told you that on this program we only deal with facts. So in essence, he was saying he didn't believe what you said.
Oh yeah, but I'm telling you, it was really bad. It got so bad. I mean, I don't usually mess with Black people as trying to put them down. But I saw him as a reputable person, and as a matter of fact, much like I did when I first did your program, right here you talked about something. I'm the kind of person that share information, so I sent some stuff in his chat room telling him that what he was saying was wrong. I said Niger is not new, and I just kind of mentioned. As a matter of fact, I screenshot it because he really upset me because I see him as a credible person up until then, and I told him, I said, Niger is not new. Only because I'm here on the East Coast in York County, Virginia. So I'm around military bases, Fort Eustis, Langley, the SEAL bases, 40 miles away.
Okay.
So I actually have people in my life to, you know, train and do joint command, plus I'm ex-military. So I tell him, I said, no, and I told him the facts. I said, you know, 53 out of 54 countries on the continent. Like I said, I'm going to repeat it. And when he told me that's a stretch, I wrote back politely, no, sir, at 64, I don't have time to do stretches. Here's some evidence. So I sent him the Google search along with the man's quote. So what does he do? He blocks me from his live broadcast.
Are you serious?
So I just stopped seriously. So I screenshot it all and put it on Facebook and then sent it to his page. I said, I'm disappointed that you claim to be a bearer of truth. And you would rather censor me than accept the fact that a white man said what I told you already. He would know there's 53 countries and only one of them doesn't have U.S. troops.
I
like your program because of the veracity and the truthfulness that you have in it, along with the same thing with Scotty Reed and his program.
And that's
behind what you say.
That in itself is part of the problem. That's what we be talking about on these airwaves. You know, that show, Earl Afari Hutchinson, is respected among Black folks, some Black folks, and among whites. He's on a nationally syndicated talk program. He's a semi-host on there, on that Sharpton show. So when they come on there and spout misinformation, doubt the veracity of other information because it directly talks about the United States government. I mean, how does that? Some of our people listen to that.
Well, you get what I'm saying. Matter of fact, someone sent me a message and told me, did I know who Earl was? And I said, yeah, I've been following him. I said, look, like I said, I actually sit underground with the largest Titan nuclear weapon on the face of the earth from 1973 to 1979. So I know what I speak of. When you tell me something like that, I don't care about your status in the public.
Okay.
If you don't want this through facts, it makes me think somebody's paying your way to crowd misinformation. I mean, I believe in COINTELPRO the whole bit. I mean,
okay.
I'm with you. You don't have to tell me.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to yield the floor and keep listening. But like I said, it really was disappointing to me that he handled it that way because rather than argue with him, I actually sent him concrete information that he could just Google. And instead, he censored me. So when he tried to censor me, sensing from his tone when I said it, because I called into the program originally, and then I wrote this in the chat room when he said, after I went to hang up, he goes, well, I don't know about that, Otis. That's a stretch, 53 countries. So I sent confirmation in the chat room. And when one of his followers wrote back to me, yeah, that's a stretch. Then I screenshot the Google search and then looked up the C-SPAN. I screenshot them all. I can send it to you in an email. I screenshot all of that and sent it back to his page. And I've been on him ever since for the last 3 weeks. As a matter of fact, I didn't know until this yesterday morning that he had censored me from getting his things because the notification came that he was about to go live. I clicked on it, and Facebook told me, either I wasn't a part of the audience or there'd been a malfunction. So then I sent him a message saying, I can't believe you censored me. So then I screenshot all of that and put it right back on Facebook and Twitter, right back to his page. I'm gonna make him own up to putting out the false information, or he can keep on blocking me, and I'll just keep it on Facebook for the next 6-7 months. Doesn't matter to me.
Richard, you want to say something?
If you're going to be a leader, you should be able to say, "Okay, I got some new information." Mm-hmm. You don't want to spread truth. You want to spread your message. That makes me think you're in somebody's pocket.
And even if you don't believe it, you can say, "I have to confirm it." I mean, it doesn't, you know, to the same point, but it's.
Like I said, you know what really got me? It's a verbal program, and you're talking to me with your lips. And I say something to you, and you wait until I hang up to say that's a stretch. Oh, no, that's not how people that respect each other, that's not how they conversate. That doesn't work that way. So like I said, then when I wrote it in your chat room and you tried to ignore it, that's when I came back at him. I said, oh, no, I should do it. And then, as a matter of fact, someone asked me, who am I? I told him, what do you mean, who am I? How do you think black people got an education before they let us into universities? I'm a human being that reads. I mean, can I stay abreast of what I'm interested in? So, well, as a matter of fact, it's kind of funny. I'm going to have to send you the screenshots now that I'm bringing it up. I'll send you some of the screenshots, because rather than attack him, I really just kind of played with him, because I told him, I said, you know, it's truth. Truth stands on its own. Right. I'm just disappointed that given factual information and some sources, you have yet to change your presentation. There's something wrong with that.
Brother Otis, thank you for
sell me a yoga book. Be strong.
Thank you for your contribution, sir.
All right.
Go ahead, Richard.
I just want to, because I think we, you know, even with that exchange as far as us and using what's going on in Zimbabwe, because this is a delicate moment, and it's so interesting that I find it interesting since last week and what's going on, that all of us being focused on that country for the reasons that we're raising of how we will handle our disagreement. And this is at the state level, mm-hmm. right? It's South Africa has something, but the difference between South Africa and Zimbabwe is that Mugabe and that leadership, that older guard, was the ones that created the National Liberation Position. So they're saying, we have to respect that. We wouldn't be a free country without you. Now, if there's internal differences, how do we do that knowing that we got the hellhounds on our back? You know, and that's because the older guard fought against those hellhounds. So they know that they're there. Mm-hmm. And as, you know, the brother said, with all of these, and you're saying, with all of these military positionings there, right now, they want is a slither of an opportunity to get in, and it creates more destabilization for the people on the ground, which has to deal with how do we, with sanctions, with our own challenge in relationship to trade, with our own challenge in relationship to our own cultural identity, how do we stay unified in this type of hostile environment? So it's a lesson for us all to really watch and look forward to and get those lessons in how do we have differences with each other and at the same time come out unified and keep those hellhounds at bay. And that's what we're looking for out of Zimbabwe, international, but it also gets at the interpersonal, you know, level. Because until we do that, we can't build structures, we can't build trust, we can't go up against, even in our own communities,
cities or rural areas in this environment when these guys are, I mean, poor whites, Ku Klux Klan whites, you know, Boulder Guard. I mean, I've seen a clip where, you know, like after that Senate hearing, he, you know, they joking with him. And some talking about that he should step down to go and go back to Alabama and run because of this other guy. So they're unified around their position of making America white again,
mm-hmm.
and making the American empire the empire of the world. They're clear about that. But we have to work through our internal differences. And that's where our history comes in at. And Zimbabwe becomes an example of how we may be able to do it.
Yeah, well, let's go to the next caller here. 646. 646, join the conversation.
Yes, brother Richard and brother Elliot.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Before everybody on the planet was watching the game.
Well, wait a minute. Before you get started. Before you get started. Before you get started, I just want to let you know that the brother Otis that calls from Newport News said that one of your co-hosts to your favorite program didn't want some truth.
No.
What do you mean, no, no?
You didn't even let me finish what I was about to say because I was just getting ready to talk about that Negro man. How you going to take a Negro serious that got half-naked pictures on Facebook posing in yoga positions?
Wait a minute. Who got the half-naked pictures? What are you talking about?
You brought all the party up to you. Half naked, basically naked pictures. He got on his bikini jumping shorts, doing yoga poses, and all of that, man. Go check the picture right quick, man.
No, that's all right.
You couldn't catch no Negro serious like that, man. What's wrong, man? All this snow, I was just... Before I could open up my mouth, you said something. I was starting this evening with that clown, man. You know how many times me and him done got into it? I don't even go on his page no more, man. I done got into it, calling up his show with that fool. He just old, man. You know, he's a classic example of a Negro being, man. And you know, he got a running partner out there in L.A. that's a real, real dangerous dude by the name of Najee Ali. I mean, he's the type of Negro that go out there and have activist brothers arrested and bring charges up on them. And then the sad thing is the community allowed the fool to walk around in the community. After he getting brothers that out there doing work protecting the community, trying to deal with real issues and all of that, you know, going to jail. But luckily, man, the brother was facing 120 days in jail. He told him he wasn't doing no community service, no probation, no nothing. Give me 120 days. So they gave him 120 days. He was out in less than 24 hours, I guess because of the overcrowdedness. So it all worked out. I guess he must have knew, you know, because of the situation and the crowdedness out there in California, they wasn't going to keep them. And, hey, you know, that's how they roll out there in California, man. They clown. Because, you know, I don't respect the Negro because he's on Perm Daddy's show. So I can't never get down with him. You know, but listen, I had a good laugh today, man. I got an opportunity, and I know your boy Joe is going to rip me a new one, but I don't care. Big deal. I had the opportunity of hearing the minister, you know, have his little press conference in regard to Trump. And when he started talking about the spaceship, you know, at that point in time, I really just had to turn it off.
That ain't right.
It is right. You know why it's right? Because number one, I don't understand. What is the purpose of the minister talking about Trump anyway, or even dealing with Trump, based on the fact that Trump ain't even paying him no mind? Trump don't even consider him a human, nor less a subhuman. So anything he try to put forward in the universe about the creator or whoever is going to deal with Trump, that's the same thing he was telling Bush. He was telling Bush's daddy, and he was telling Obama, and we in the same position. So now he's going to spin the same rhetoric to Trump, and ain't nothing going to change. Let's just cut it out. Keep it. Let's keep it 100.
Wasn't he saying, though, I mean, and I understand your part, and the Ezekiel piece, you know, and I remember at that time when he presented that. But wasn't he saying also, and maybe because you cut it out, but cut it off, you might not have caught it, or maybe I'm reading it wrong, that Trump being an anomaly, the difference between, because he said that you're going to do the deal with the six presidents and even with Obama, but Trump being an anomaly, that he is going to create the war that the rest of them, starting with Reagan, started to establish, and specifically the war being on two fronts, amongst the Arab world specifically, and then amongst the young black world in North America, or in North America particularly, and that he made that connection going from Reagan to Trump. So, that's how I see it.
The war is going to happen regardless who is in office. The thing is, you know what these white folks are making their biggest mistake is? What they're about to do with this whole tax bill, if it goes through, you're going to cause such economic despair in this country. And when these white folks figure out how they done been played and they done been manipulated and they done been put in a checkmate position, yo, you're going to have quite a few start acting and behaving like Timothy Bovee of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Now, as far as black people go, we just too stupid to even deal with the situation. We just gonna be long suffering because we don't deal in the type of patriotism ideology other than kissing the behind of the Democratic Party. See, because we think that they gonna be our savior, but the sad thing is that even if over the next 2 years they were able to gain any type of control, they'll never make the necessary changes to correct what's about to go down if it happens.
So, well, you know, I what,
mean,
Richard? I mean,
talking.
You know what, Jay? Listen, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, brother.
Well, the mentality of our young people is changing rapidly. They realize that a lot of our young people don't really care about voting, don't want to get involved in voting. That's why they keep sending these surrogates out. Obama went out a little while ago to try to rally people to vote. They know that that's losing steam among a lot of our people. And it's losing steam because of the failure of this, not only election process, but black elected officials. So it's a void there. And that's where other knowledge is coming in to fill that void. It's these think tanks are going on all over the place. And if they're not going on in particular cities, they're going on over social media where people can hear what other brothers and sisters are doing and become a part of those things. So the mentality is changing. Europeans know this. They know this clearly. That's why you see all this stuff popping up about the black identity extremists. We got to keep a watch on them. When groups come up, they want to fund them. They want to fund them because they want to control. They want to see what's going on. They know it's almost like somebody didn't stole something from you, but he's pretending to be your friend. He's always looking. He's always nervous because one time or another, you're going to find out what's going on. I don't think our people is as slow as you think, Brother Jay. and especially this new generation of young people.
It's not a matter of being slow. It's a matter of them being able to connect the dots on how it's affecting them and being able to control the narrative on their response. Because, see, what's going to happen is they're going to figure it out. But by the time they figure it out, my concern is having that white boy be in control on how you respond. See, that's the thing that my only concern is. Because, see, we don't put together the necessary think tanks to educate our children on how you have to deal with these situations. This was like I was talking to a young brother today that's in college, and he was home on his Thanksgiving break, and this is like he's in his junior year. And we were just rapping, sitting down, having a little lunch. And you know, I was saying to him, you know, what is your plan? He said, well, I really want to go to medical school, or I want to go to pharmacy school. So I said, okay, that sounds good. What's your grade point average now that you're in your junior year? He told me, well, you know, my grade point average is a 2.8. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm telling him, bro, listen, man, you've been there going on your third year now. I know from talking to you, your first 2 years there, you were playing games. You were doing your thing. In order for you to make these necessary moves and to get yourself in the position where you're not going to be an economic slave because of the type of debt you're going to have to do, and to even have a chance to really get into medical school, you're going to have to get that GPA up to at least a 3.5, 3.6, or I'm telling you now, you're wasting your time. You know what I mean? Now, the brother that I was sitting down with, that was sitting down with us, he got a little offended by the way I was talking to him. And I had to really, really check him and let him know, why am I going to sit here with a young brother, 20 years old, with the type of intelligence that he has, knowing that he made some, not mistakes, but he was enjoying himself, and sugarcoat and lie to him and give him this delusion that he may be able to do these things and not tell him in order to do them what he's going to now have to do and go forward and achieve. I'm wasting my time, which I don't have, and I'm wasting his time. And the funny thing was, you know, the Negro thought he was really saying something. And the thing that I loved so much about it was that the young brother that was there with us, he just sat there and listened. And he said to him, you know something? He's absolutely right. Because I don't want to be placed in a situation where I'm going to get caught up in too much serious debt because of the simple fact I've been told this before. The higher GPA I have when I finish college is the more money that I'll be able to get when I go to grad school or apply for grad school or any other situation. You know what I mean? So I'm like trying to say to the brother, I'm not being rough on him. I'm trying to just tell him what he needs to do. What am I supposed to do? Sugarcoat him? He's 20 years old. I don't sugarcoat nothing with a 20-year-old that's in college for two years now, his third year. What's wrong with you? That's the problem. We sugarcoating too many things with these young kids, and we're not telling them, if you go to college today because of the situation, if you're not going to do better than a 3.5 to a 4.0 or better, whatever the GPA scale is, as far as I'm concerned, you're wasting your time. Because when I went to college, you could come out with a 3.0 or lower and have an opportunity to get a job. You can't do that now. But these parents don't be telling it to these kids. This is one of my biggest issues with parents today. They say, go to college and get an education and come out here and see what may happen. But the thing they never tell them is that employers now look at things different than when it was 20 years ago when we were coming out. And on top of that, the debt issue is totally different. You see what I'm saying? They talking about now, which I saw in the New York Times today, that people that default on their student loans right. in certain states in this country are losing their license. Now, right. I may be wrong. Aren't you a barber, Brother Elliot?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you defaulted on your student loan, they would take your barber's license away right. from you. They had a nurse in the article talking about, now think about this. Now, this is the white man's logic. She making $80-some thousand a year. She got sick. She had to stop working, got behind on her student loan, went into default. They took her license away from her. So now she can't work. And now she got to go on public assistance in order to survive. And here it is, with $80-some thousand a year, you know what type of money they was getting in taxes. Now, can you explain to me the logic of that?
Because it ain't the government, it's the banks. The government is support, but those loans are tied to the banks. And the banks want their money. And the banks don't care.
Stop. The government is the one who's doing it, because you got to remember, the government insures the banks loans.
Right.
So that's the one who's really doing it.
Yeah, but this last recession shows who really is in control here. Right.
Right.
Because truly it was supposed to be the government controlling the banks. Right. But in the end, right. who actually did control, and who did the government pay off in order for them to be able? I mean, they were having parties before it crashed, and they got paid off to prevent the bailout and still was having parties. So
it
I'm
never,
saying
it never put. And never put the proper regulations into place.
The regulation, I can't think of the two senators now that they were trying to regulate. That's what they're pulling back on. That's what Trump is coming into to pull back on that regulation. But the point of the structure. And the structure has been the banks, the American structure, the American empire, because that's when you talk about the IMF. I mean, we have to look at it that this is the way this thing works. And they never cared about a citizenry. That's why they were able to go chase cheap labor. And now the people crying, well, why did you send the manufacturing overseas? Because they don't care. Who controls the manufacturing? The banks. How do the banks control the manufacturing? They control the loan. And the manufacturers have to pay back those business loans. I'm agreeing with you in relationship to speaking truth to these young people that we don't do. And I'm agreeing with you, and I'm glad people like you and others are there who are interceding to be able to speak the truth, because we can push that back. And I think, Elliot, you was raising that a couple of weeks ago. They're saying at third grade, we can know who's going to prison.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been like that for the last, that's been like that ever since I was a kid, man.
Because
I lived in the district. I lived in the district where they first started that close to 40 years ago, because there was seven, matter of fact, over the last 40 years, there's been seven districts in New York City that are all black that fulfill population in New York State. And you know how big New York State is. And it's probably the same way in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
At the same time, the political representation has grown. Black political representation has grown. Black administrators in those schools have grown. Black teachers have grown. And at the second...
Black teachers haven't. Black political, in a sense, maybe, but not with any sense of power or authority.
I mean, but just in the number of going becoming teachers, and primarily there have been females, because here in Philadelphia, they've been talking about they don't have enough black males in the schools. But the point is that
New York is worse.
Yeah,
New York they don't have that many black male teachers, and to be honest with you, they don't have that many black female teachers either. The population of black teachers in New York, I would probably honestly say at best is maybe 25 to 30%. It's at the, let me tell you how deep it is right now. It's at the point to where as you got cats who can't get on Wall Street that go to Harvard, Yale, and Cornell in these top schools, becoming school teachers in New York for a period of 4 or 5 years because they help pay a percentage of their debt.
Right, and that's what the government is saying, and they started that with Clinton. That's what the government is saying, that the agreement between the banks and the government is saying, well, look, we'll make them debt slaves. Now you can get them to work for nothing, in the sense of giving them a subsidy by having them work in these public institutions where they wouldn't really want to work because they got this supposedly college education. So they think then they can move out. But they ain't going to move out because they ain't going to get them jobs in the suburbs.
But do you know what's in play with that? Do you know what's also in play with that? The charter school.
Right.
The charter school played a big role in creating that whole thing. You know, most people don't even realize or aren't even honest about the wicked tree of charter schools. Charter schools are wicked. You know what I mean? Some of them do good. Some of them don't do good. But on the whole, if you were to honestly talk about education and the role that charter schools have played in the black community, I would say they've been a total utter disaster. You know what I mean? But then again, as a Pan-African, it's a disaster because it's never going to culturally get you to culturally identify who you are. So it's always going to be a disaster to me. But if you really look at it, it's not as good as one would assume it to be. But then again,
I agree. And I work with a charter school, but it's not. Right. But the thing is not necessarily that the political institution, because it's really just a public school, but by a different name. But it's the people who come to it. So the parents, the culture of the community that comes to the school, and that gets into the student, that gets into what you said to that college student should be said to the kindergarten student in a charter school by the teacher and the administrator who are there. Because the political move of the parents was trying to get them out of those schools, those public schools. That was a political move. They did that with their feet. They actually, that became a phenomenon. They knew that the public school wasn't working, and they gave the government gave them an option, charter, and they made that choice. Now, did they do all the other things in the sense of actually managing the charter school? As it a political entity, as a means of the education? No, because our community is not taking control over developing our asset, our human asset, our human capital. So people like yourself, when you had the conversation with that college student, there's another person who you said is being unreasonably soft, really lying to him, setting him on a path for his own destruction, sitting right there.
He got to placate. He got to be soft with him because, you know, for some reason we feel as though we can't talk to these kids but a certain way. You know what I mean? I don't. Once you get a certain age, I don't play that game with you because I know how harsh it's going to be out here. You know what I mean? If I know you can handle being talked to in a direct fashion, then I'll talk to you in a direct fashion. If I know you a little slow and you soft and you've been cuddled, then, number one, I'm not even going to mess with you. You know what I mean? But me and him been around one another for quite a while, so he know my style. And he know what I'm going to tell him is raw. So I'll sit there and I could laugh at him, and I could say, man, you had a good time. I know you done slayed you a whole bunch of girls with your pretty-looking self and blah, blah, blah. But then when I say, okay, now let's talk business and let's talk about, okay, you're a junior now. Let's cut the BS. This is what the deal is. You got that 2.8 whatever. Are you going to be able to get to this 3.5 or 3.7? Now, he was honest enough to say to me that he doesn't know if he's going to be able to get to the 3.5 or the 3.7, right? So I said, mm-hmm. Okay, so you don't think you could do it. So I think what you need to focus on is not going to medical school, but going to pharmacy school. Because pharmacy school, you could get into pharmacy with a lower grade point average, and the debt ratio may be better, and there's going to be a lot of opportunities maybe for you in that level. Okay, so now what you need to do is, let's start doing the research on that.
Well, bring it.
Let's look into doing the core classes that's necessary to maybe make that happen. Okay? Mm-hmm. But don't give up trying to get that 3.5, 3.6. You know what I mean? And the good thing is, you know, he had the ability to understand what I was saying. And knowing him, I think, you know, he's going to be all right. But the good thing is, you got to let these kids have the opportunity to have some fun, but at some point in time, you got to put your foot in their behind, and you got to let them know, okay, you got to buckle down because it's a harsh world, and there's not a lot of opportunities that's going to be out there because these white boys and white girls ain't got a lot of opportunities, and what they're trying to do right now with this whole tax thing, I think it's going to be even less opportunities. Because this guy's trying to decimate the middle class with this trickle-down economic theory stating that if we give more money to the rich, they're going to hire people and give them jobs. And we know from what happened with Reagan, it never happened. So, I don't know.
Maybe, thank you for your contribution.
Maybe we'll figure it out.
Thank you for your contribution, man.
Have a good night, brothers.
Peace.
Right, hey, Richard.
Yes, Richard.
Enjoy the week. And don't let your daddy work you too hard. But then again, it's a short week for you. You only got to work till maybe Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday, and the daddy will give you off.
It ain't like this is a real plantation. I'm in. You know, they give you no sweat. You know, no sweat.
They got you working Thursday, man? Come in Friday?
Yes, there you go.
Daddy love you, baby. Just make sure they do one. Just make the daddy do one thing. Pay you time and a half.
You know, they cutting time. They ain't paying no more.
You know, Woody was the conversation that you guys were having was good. But what I want to say is I want to add something to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's time now that we not only have the serious conversations with our young people, but develop a Marshall Plan, just like whites did for their brother, for our young people. The future for our young people is not here and on this continent necessarily, but it's with the motherland, the richest continent on the face of this earth. When this man was here and colonized this country in the decimated, committed genocide on the indigenous population. He told his brethren in Europe, come on over here. This is the land of the plenty. Make a new life. And for almost, from the mid-1800s, maybe early 1800s, to the early 1900s, you had a whole influx of Europeans coming here by the boatloads, ready to start a new life in a burgeoning economy that was created off the backs of our ancestors. They was ready to take advantage of it. Well, it's the same thing now. Now, if the situation was reversed, Richard, and Europe was a land-rich, wealthy continent without maybe the technology to take advantage of some of those riches, whether they're mineral or in the ground, then you would have Europeans doing all they could to develop the educational apparatus to go and help Europe. And I'm talking about from here. Mm-hmm. They would be going to help their mother continent. But through ignorance and self-hatred, and it was hundreds of years of it, we don't see the connection with helping the mother continent. We can see clearly that they don't have the technology in a lot of areas. But we're here. And we have the advantage of certain educational systems. We do have that advantage. A Marshall Plan needs to be developed where we are dedicating so much to agriculture, so much to medicine, so much to technology, so our people can start helping the mother continent, developing dual citizenship if they want to stay here, trying to get citizenship, period, so they can leave here like we've known people that have. These things have to be talked about. The serious conversations need to be had. Because staying here looking for jobs, there ain't no jobs. And if they are jobs, he ain't interested in giving them to black folks. So we going to be on their own. We going to be on our own like we always been. Now, sure, he want to make money off of you. So he'll put you on a plantation, give you 10 to 20 years, and that way he can make money off of our young people. That's what he envisions our young people, the new old slavery.
And that's what we call debt slaves, because those who carry those debt, those college students, those college debts, especially whether the ones who completed it, complete college or didn't, they still got to figure out how they got to pay it. So they trapped, you know. So it ain't chattel. It ain't wage. Now it's debt. Whether you got a wage or not, you still beholden.
I mean, we heard Obi last week talk about in Zimbabwe that 68% of the farming is done by sisters, by women. But they need help. And if the technology is not available there because of sanctions and other stuff that these Europeans have done, then we have the advantage of being here with Europeans and going to some of their educational facilities. What's stopping us from lending a hand with our brothers and sisters, not only in Zimbabwe, but other African countries, to give them the technology, give them the leg up, to help ourselves? If we're helping them, we're helping ourselves. The thing is, we can't fall in the trap of having that disconnect. Oh, he's from the islands. He ain't part of me. He's from the continent. He don't belong to me. They talk about us. We can't fall into all that. This is that foolishness that the man didn't put out there. And some of our people fall into that trap.
True.
They fall into the trap. And putting all our eggs in a voting basket. Oh, we need to vote to change. Listen, voting by itself is not going to change the situation that we're dealing with here. It's a tool that can be used, certainly. It's a tool that can be used to divert funds and other things to helping our people in some of these cities where they dwell. In other municipalities and other suburban areas or even rural areas where they dwell. But it ain't no be-all and end-all like you hear these Democratic surrogates and some of these black voices whether it's Cory Booker or whoever. They keep talking about some voting, voting, voting. Your parents died for that right. Your ancestors died. The hell, come on. Don't minimize this thing talking about our ancestors died for no damn right to vote. If they wanted to go in the store and the white folks didn't want them to do it, they might have died for that. It's a lot of things they died for. To minimize it for the right to vote is doing our people a disservice. And I want to get around, because I know we can't do it today because of time constraints. And you kind of behind anyway right now, Richard. But I want to get around to reading that, and I'm going to make a concerted effort to do it next week. Reading the minutes of that meeting between our ancestors and government officials right after the Civil War. Because it was a reconstruction. This man had to reconstruct facets of his government. He had to, listen, and I'll just read this little passage, because there was a lot of things going on during that period that some of our people, history, just like John Henry Clark says at the beginning of the program, history is a clock where we can tell our people's cultural time of day. If you look, and I'm going to just read this and just point out in the brief time we have left some preludes to the conversation we're going to have in upcoming weeks in reference to that meeting that took place between government officials and our ancestors. In 1770, Crispin Attucks, a black man, became the first casualty of the American Revolution. British soldiers fired on a crowd, and Attucks was killed, along with four others. The shootings was quickly dubbed a Boston Massacre and held up an angry colonist as a case of British brutality. John Adams, who was one of the founding fathers, he was the second president, mm-hmm. and the first vice president. John Adams defended the British soldiers and won an acquittal, arguing that Attucks was a common thug, not a political freedom fighter. He died for his country that would later legally enslave, torture, and kill millions of black men, women, and children. Now, let's look back at that statement, Richard, because I'm going to finish this paragraph, but I want to stop there a second. Now, after Attucks was killed, John Adams, one of their founding fathers, defended the British soldiers in court, won an acquittal, because he said that Attucks was a thug and he wasn't a freedom fighter. Has that mentality changed by Europeans? Our people keep falling for this old bull crap about it's a post-racial society. White folks have changed. I got a white friend. Come on here. That same mentality that John Adams expressed in court is still here now. They look at black men, black young boys as thugs. It hasn't changed. This man defended British soldiers in open court, said they didn't do nothing wrong. That man wasn't a freedom fighter. He was a thug, Crispus Attucks. We laud him as being a hero. But you see how the U.S. government looked at him. And I don't care how they try to paint it now, because that's just an image they want to portray, a facade. They looked at Attucks as a thug. And basically, Attucks died for this country. He was a casualty in the American Revolution. But your country went on to, just like this article says, went on to kill millions of black men, women, and children. So do we hold Attucks in high esteem because he died for this country? Don't keep telling young people, oh, our parents died for that right to vote. Don't minimize it like that. You're doing our ancestors a disservice. Now I'm going to finish up this paragraph. It says, while the South was fighting to preserve the institution of slavery, Lincoln was fighting to save the Union during the Civil War. And black people were fighting for their human right to be free. So it was three things going on during that Civil War. We got to have real conversations with our young people. It was three things going on. The South was fighting to preserve slavery, and plus they wanted their cut of the money that Northern whites was what they figured they were being robbed of. Lincoln was fighting to preserve the Union. He said so in several writings that he wouldn't end slavery if he could preserve the Union. He was fighting to preserve the Union. But when black people got into that war, they were fighting for their human right to be free, period. It says that the end of this article says, by the end of the Civil War, roughly 179,000 black men served as soldiers in the U.S. Army, and another 19,000 served in the Navy. Nearly 40,000 black soldiers died over the course of that war. Ain't none of our people died for no damn right. Our people died to be free of this man, period. And if you doubt it, when I get a chance, I want to read, and I'm glad you shared with me those minutes of that meeting that occurred in January 12th, 1865, at 8 o'clock in the evening between representatives of this government headed by Major General Sherman and black leaders during that period. Hear what our ancestors told white folks when they asked them direct questions and their answers to those direct questions. And keep in mind, this was during the Reconstruction period of this government. At that time, the fabric of the government had been ripped apart through that Civil War. And it was a Reconstruction period, Rich. You gave it to me.
Yeah.
We can share with them how our ancestors felt about their situation during that period and what they thought would happen. Because they, listen, our ancestors wasn't stupid. They wasn't ignorant. They knew that this country had been torn apart through that war. They knew it was their opportunity to hopefully get some things done. We'll hear their sentiments in an upcoming show to counter the argument that our ancestors died, to minimize and counter the foolish argument that our ancestors died just for the right to vote. Just wanted to make mention of that, Richard. I know that.
I think it's important. I think it's important for us to hear.
Let's take a brief break, and then when we come back, we're gonna wind the show down. Shoot, we don't have enough time for another call, but we're gonna take a brief break. And when we come back, we're gonna start winding things down. It's time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
What is in 1 million brothers and sisters who are tired of the same old rhetoric, the same old leaders, the same old ways of dealing with political and economic empowerment? If you realize that nobody's going to save black people but us, if you understand that no existing political party prioritizes the best interests of African Americans as a collective, if you believe that leadership is as leadership does, and this means that the best leaders for the black collective must come from the ranks of those who place and hold the best interests of black people foremost and uttermost, if you understand that black people must develop the mindset and the will to finance their own racial uplift organizational efforts, then get involved with 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. The movement is now. Go to www.iamoneofthemillion.com. That's www.iamoneofthemillion.com.
Hey, yeah, we're the same brothers from a long time ago. We were talking about television and doing it on the radio. What we did was to help our generation realize they got to get out there and get busy because it wasn't going to be televised. We got respect for your rappers and the way they freeway in. But if you're going to be teaching folks things, be sure you know what you're saying. Older folks in our neighborhood got plenty of know-how. Remember, if it wasn't for them, you wouldn't be out there now. I ain't coming at you with no disrespect. All I'm saying is that you damn well got to be correct. Because if you're going to be speaking for a whole generation, and you know enough to try and handle their education, be sure you know the real deal about past situations and ain't just repeating what you heard on the local TV station. Sometimes they tell lies and put them in a truthful disguise. But the truth is, that's why we said it wouldn't be televised. They don't know what to say to our young folks, but they know that you do. And if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? The first sign is peace. Tell all them gun-toting young brothers that the man is glad to see us out there killing one another. We raised too much hell when they were shooting us down, so they started poisoning our mind and trying to jerk us all around. And then they tell us they got to come in and control our situation. They want half of us on dope and the other half in incarceration. If the ones they want dead ain't killed by what they instigated, they can put some dope on the brother's body and claim it was drug-related. Tell them drug-related means there don't need to be no investigation, or at least that's the way they're gonna play it on the local TV station. All your 9mm brothers, give them something to think about. Tell them you heard that this is the new word. They got to work that stuff out. But somehow they feel in the wrong way with a gun in their hands. They're feeling real independent, but they just pulling contracts with a man. 5 and 5 will tell you it's hopeless out there on the avenue, but if they really knew the truth, why would they tell you? And if they look at you like you're insane and they start calling you scarecrow and say you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have finally co-opted your game, or worse yet, implying that you don't really know, that's the same thing they said about us a long time ago. Young rappers, one more suggestion before I get out of your way. But I appreciate the respect you give me and what you got to say. I'm saying protect your community and spread that respect around. Tell brothers and sisters they got to calm that bullshit down. Because we're terrorizing our old folks and we brought fear into our homes. And they ain't got to hang out with the senior citizens. Just tell them, damn it, leave the old folks alone. And we know who's ripping off the neighborhood. Tell them that BS has got to stop. Tell them you're sorry they can't handle it out there, but they got to take the crime off the block. And if they look at you like they think you're insane, they'll start calling you scarecrow, thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that white folks have suddenly co-opted your game, or worse yet, saying that you really don't know. That's the same thing they said about me a long time ago. And if they tell folks that you finally lost your nerve, that's the same thing they said about us when we said Johannesburg. But I think you young folks need to know that things don't go both ways. You can't talk respect on every other song or just every other name. What I'm speaking on now is the raps about the women folks. On one song, she's your African queen, and on the next one, she's a joke. And you ain't said no words that I haven't heard, but that ain't no compliment. It only insults 8 people out of 10 and questions your intelligence. 4-letter words or 4-syllable words won't make you a poet. It will only magnify how shallow you are and that everybody know it. And if they look at you like they think you're insane, or they call you scarecrow thinking you ain't got no brain, or start telling folks that you suddenly gone lame, or that the white folks have finally co-opted your game, or you really don't know, they said that about me a long time ago. If they finally start telling people that you lost your nerve, that's what they said about Johannesburg. You ain't insane. You have got a brain. You haven't gone lame. You have got your game. Remember, keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve. Keep the nerve.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And I want to thank again our guest that we had during the first portion of the program, Health Minister for the Universal African People's Organization. Minister Nathaniel Jordan was with us earlier in the program. Probably be a regular spot once a month to come on and talk about health issues. Some of the issues that he'll target, we'll kind of billboard it so you'll know exactly when he'll be with us. So get your questions and call up and ask him some questions the next time, because I know that a lot of listening audience is suffering from a lot of these diseases, and it's in their families. It's in my family. So, you know, next time interact with the health minister when he's on, or send him notifications so you can get some of the information so you can start changing our eating habits and lengthening the lives of not only ourselves but our loved ones. Brother Richard, any last things before we wind it up?
I think you said it all. Health has to be expanded in all the dimensions. So let's start there, develop there, and end there.
Before we leave the program today, I'm going to make an announcement leading up to, and I guess Brother Obi will be on maybe about a week or so out from the event, but African Independence Day Organization Committee and the Urban Shaman Productions presents the 2nd annual Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration to be held Saturday, December 23rd, 2017, at the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street here in Philadelphia. The donation at the door is $5. Children are admitted absolutely free. There'll be guest performances, speakers, the lighting of the ceremonial Kanara, and vendors are needed. So for more information, there's 3 ways to contact. You can send them an email at africanindependenceday@gmail.com. Again, that's africanindependenceday@gmail.com. You can go to the website and drop them a message to the website at africanindependenceday.org. Again, that's africanindependenceday.org. Or you can give them a call if you're in the local area, 267-521-1544. Again, that's 267-521-1544. The 2nd annual Buy Black Marketplace and Pre-Kwanzaa Celebration, Saturday, December 23rd, 2017. At the historic Church of the Advocate, 1801 Diamond Street in Philadelphia. The donation is $5 at the door. Children are admitted absolutely free. Hope to see you there. Myself and Brother Richard plan to do a live broadcast from a location, and we hope to have another special edition to the Buy Black Marketplace, and we'll let you know about that in the upcoming. Hopefully we'll have things situated, Richard, one of our past guests. Before the week is out. So I'll have another announcement the next time we talk about when we billboard the Buy Black Marketplace.
Great.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. A lively discussion. as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of. And little Mary, she said,